Save big money on your next project. Now at Menards. Update your home with low-maintenance vinyl windows from JELD-WEN. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on JELD-WEN windows now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Go!
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another Baseball America podcast. I am Carlos Collazo, joined today by Kyle Glazer, and we're going to be talking the Cardinals farm system. Kyle, how's it going, man?
Doing all right, Carlos. It was a good holiday season, good New Year's, and glad to be back podcasting with you now.
Yeah, definitely. It's always nice to get a good break, but we're getting excited for the season. Lots of preview stuff going on behind the scenes here in the Baseball America office, and we're continuing to plug along in these top 10, top 30 podcasts. Today, obviously, talking about the NL Central champs from the 2019 season. They made the playoffs for the first time since 2015, which is honestly a little bit surprising. I mean, the Cardinals are one of those teams you just associate with consistent success. And so that kind of gap in making the playoffs is a bit surprising. But we're here to talk about their farm system. What's kind of the state of the system right now, Kyle? I mean, again, this is a team that I feel like just kind of continues to pump out major league contributors, whether that's not necessarily star players, but just kind of steady, very useful, productive major leaguers in a number of different capacities. But what's kind of the state of the system right now?
Yeah, I mean, the state of the system is that they've done exactly as you said. You mentioned they got back to the postseason for the first time in a few years, got to the NLCS, and look, this is what the Cardinals do. They produce tremendous homegrown talent. They keep the best. They use the rest in trades. And that's what kind of fueled this most recent division championship. Recent years, they brought up Jack Flaherty, Dakota Hudson, Paul DeJong. We saw them get Tommy Edman up midway through last year. He made a difference. So they keep bringing up guys who could really, really help them and do help them very quickly. Jordan Hicks is another guy, Ryan Helsley. All homegrown guys who were drafted or signed originally by the Cardinals. And then they use a lot of other guys in trades that help get them over the top. We saw them trade Sandy Alcantara and Zach Gallen for Marcell Ozuna. They were the two main pieces there. They both have turned into very solid big leaguers. Alcantara made his first All-Star game last year with the Diamondbacks, and with the Marlins, excuse me. Gallen was a standout for the Marlins before being traded to the Diamondbacks. They traded Carson Kelly and Luke Weaver to the Diamondbacks directly to get Paul Goldschmidt, another, you know, two other homegrown guys. So the Cardinals keep churning out this homegrown talent. It's a good system consistently, and it's a good system again. You look now at, you know, what's left over after graduating all that talent to the majors and trading a bunch of other guys to help be that winning major league team. You still have a pretty solid, I'd say 1-9. You could argue 1-11. It is a little more shallow at the back. Just the Cardinals, you'll remember, did not have a first or second round pick in 2017 as punishment for the hacking of the Astros database by former scouting director Chris Correa. Some of their other first rounders either haven't had enough time yet to really establish themselves, or it's been more mixed. So it's not the deepest the system has been, but you know, this is the Cardinals. You know that they're going to get the most from the guys they have. And 1-11, they're in pretty good shape. And there are some guys below you can feel a little optimistic on. So again, it's not a great system, but it's not a bad system. We will see it in the 10 to 15 range. I would classify it as an above average system right now.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about where you would rank it kind of among all the 30 teams. So that sounds like pretty solid, especially when you consider the quality of the major league product right now. So once again, the Cardinals are in good shape. Seems like they always are. But let's just start going through the prospects. The number one in this system is Dylan Carlson. Last year, he was the number 10 in this system. So that's quite a hefty jump for 1 year. Kyle, was there any question as to whether or not Carlson was the number one, and how was he able to jump so much in a relatively brief span of time?
Yeah, it was pretty consensus, both from evaluators inside the Cardinals organization as well as evaluators outside of it. Dylan Carlson was always a player who you really loved the makeup, you loved the instincts, he had a really good feel for the game. His dad, Jeff Carlson, is actually a pretty legendary high school coach in Northern California. Elk Grove High School, just south of Sacramento, built a tremendous program that has produced a lot of big leaguers, J.D. Davis, David Hernandez. More recently, we saw Nick Madrigal, fourth overall pick out of Oregon State. He's an Elk Grove guy. And Dylan was a supplemental first rounder, 33rd overall pick. So he was highly touted out of a well-renowned program with a great baseball mind at the head of it. And he always just held his own at a young age at every level. He was pretty much the youngest player everywhere he went. Mm-hmm. Numbers never popped, but he was always average to slightly above, hanging in there with guys 2, 3, 4 years his senior. And he hit age 20. He got stronger. He had a little bit of that physical blossom that happens for young men when you go from mm-hmm. a teenager to your 20s. And he just exploded this year. Now that he had the physicality to kind of match up with the baseball instincts, I mean, he was a terror. He won MVP of the Texas League, a AA league, at age 20. He was one of only 10 minor leaguers to go 20-20. He really kind of tapped into who he is as a hitter, finding both power and average. He always had, you know, speed, the ability to play all three outfield positions. Again, mm-hmm. you know, good athlete, good makeup, understood the game, just kind of caught up physically, and we saw the results. It was really kind of everything coming together at the right time. Finished the year in AAA, and he's right on the cusp of the majors.
Yeah, I was about to ask, what do you kind of see of his future? How long do you think Cardinals fans are going to have to wait before they see him on their major league club? What do you see his role being in 2020?
Some of that's going to depend on what else the Cardinals do here in free agency. Marcelo Ozuna is a free agent right now. He is currently unsigned. You know, whether the Cardinals bring him back will have an effect here, but Dylan Carlson will make his major league debut as long as he's healthy at some point in 2020. I don't think it'll be opening day. He was up at AAA just for a very little bit at the end of last year. You can always grow from that level, seeing former major league pitchers, guys who've been there, how they're going to sequence you.
Gotcha.
I do think May-ish is probably reasonable. Again, injuries will have an effect. Who else, you know, comes in and gets signed? But he'll be playing in St. Louis in 2020, and I think Cardinals fans are going to really, really like him.
Awesome. All right, number two prospect is someone I'm a little bit more familiar with. That's Nolan Gorman. He was the number 19 overall pick, so Cardinals' first rounder in the 2018 draft. Really good high school class that year. Gorman had some of the biggest power in that class, high school or college, and then had a phenomenal start to his pro debut. He hit a lot more than I guess amateur scouts would have expected him to hit. There were some swing and miss concerns pre-draft, but he really just was phenomenal during his debut. He's now the number two in the Cardinals system. How has Gorman developed over his first year and a half in pro ball, Kyle?
You know, it's interesting. So he got off to a tremendous start. He hit 24 home runs in his first 85 career games. That's a little bit after he signed in 2018 and really through April of this year. I mean, he looked like he was on a path to be one of the top 50 prospects in baseball. We wrote about high school first rounders who had hit like he had in the track record, and it was some pretty amazing names he was in the company of. He really, really cooled off after April. He hit only 8 home runs in the final 104 games of the season. One of the big things with Nolan Gorman is he's just tremendously strong, just this natural power that he doesn't have to swing hard to get to it. He can almost take a contact type of swing and the ball's going to go 400 feet. What happened was he started kind of getting too pull-oriented and uphill in his swing path, almost trying to be a launch angle guy, trying to crush everything when he doesn't have to be. He can just yep. kind of be a natural hitter and the ball's going to fly. So this happens, right? Young hitters finding their approach, going through the process. There's still a lot of confidence that, hey, it's in there. He's going to hit for a decent average. He's going to hit for a lot of power. This is just part of the process and he'll figure it out. So even though mm-hmm. the numbers were not great, we saw the power really tail off. Just talking to evaluators, both inside and outside the system, I want to say I was surprised how much optimism there still was. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting to me because normally when guys fall off like he did, people start picking holes. They find out, they find what's wrong. They start to question mm-hmm. whether it's real or not. With Nolan Gorman, it was still pretty consensus. Hey, he's going to be a really good player. This is just part of the growth and development process. Once he figures out, mm-hmm. he doesn't have to be this pull-oriented uphill swing path guy to hit home runs, he'll be fine.
Yep. He was a fairly young guy coming out of the draft as well, so I imagine you can be a little bit patient with him. What about defensively? Has anything changed in his defensive profile I know he's definitely a bat first guy. You're excited about Nolan Gorman because of that left-handed power potential that he brings. But he is a third baseman. Do you think he's going to stick there? Will he have to move over to first? What does he need to do to kind of improve at that spot?
Yeah, there's actually a pretty strong consensus he can stay at third base. After he was drafted, it seemed a little bit split just because, you know, he's a bigger guy. He's a little bit stiff. But, you know, everyone saw that he's making every play he should. He's got quick exchange, got above average arm. You know, some of that first step quickness needs to improve. But again, that's that's reps. That's time. That's experience. In terms of just his ability, you know, you see everything there to remain a third baseman. And, you know, when scouts talked about, you know, what they thought he could be, again, both inside and outside the organization, I don't want to say, again, I was surprised, but it was pretty noticeable how they all said, yeah, no, he's totally fine at third. He'll be fine over there. And, you know, if everything comes together, you've got a power-hitting third baseman who's, you know, a potential all-star. Kyle Seager is actually a fairly I'd say common comparison. I got that a couple of times. So, look, Kyle Seager in his prime, you know, hit home runs, played a good third base, with an all, you know, made an all-star game or two. That's a good player and someone, again, I think the Cardinals would be very happy to have as their long-term third baseman if Nolan Gorman could reach those heights.
Yeah, no doubt. So we got one and two down. It sounds like the 3 to 6 range here on this list, is these next four players were a little bit more muddled than the 1-2. It sounds like the 1-2 is pretty obvious, but when you get into the Genesis Cabrera, Ryan Helsley, Ivan Herrera, and then their latest first-round pick, Zach Thompson, maybe you could have gone a number of different ways. Is that the case, Kyle, just from me kind of looking in from the outside and putting this together?
Absolutely. The top two prospects were really the consensus top two in the order they're in. 3 through 6, if you talk to five different guys, you're going to get five different answers on how you should stack them up. I gave points to Cabrera and Helsley. Look, they got to the major leagues, and they showed their stuff plays there. Both these guys made it not only onto the NLDS roster, the NLCS roster as well. But that's real stuff for two guys who were rookies to be thrown into the bullpen in the National League Championship Series. And the Cardinals have a long history of taking really good pitching prospects, starting them out in the bullpen, transitioning them to the rotation. There's a lot to like with these two arms. They're both able to get up to 100 plus. They both have a nasty secondary at their disposal. Cabrera with his slider, Helsley with his cutter. Both of them broke in as relievers. A lot of people see them as relievers. The Cardinals have told me they intend to bring both to spring training as starters, you know, just see how it goes, see if they can win a spot. But anytime you have two young arms that are this electric, that are major league ready, that have shown their stuff plays in the majors, and they have a nasty secondary at their disposal, you know, as much as Zach Thompson and Ivan Herrera have promise and are very, very good prospects, and there is an argument for them at 3-4, what Cabrera and Helsley have and what they've accomplished, you kind of have to give them the edge, at least from my vantage point.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, and then you have Herrera 5 and Thompson 6. How did you go about sorting those two in that order?
That was really, really tough. Ultimately, you know, Ivan Herrera is a teenage catcher who hit 335 in the DSL, jumped to full season ball, got to high class A this year. He hit 286, an 805 OPS, the Midwest League, and not just keep regurgitating stats at you. The point is, this kid can really, really hit. Anytime you have a young catcher who can really, really hit, you're going to get excited about that. He's also a pretty good defender, not a great defender, but a good one. So, you know, you look around, you say, let's see, teenage catcher, high A, hit for average, gets on base, shows hits of power he could grow into, you know, solid defensively, just needs some polish. Like, that's a pretty good prospect a lot of teams would like to have. He's never failed. He's been pushed aggressively. The makeup is solid. There's a lot to like with him. Now, we have seen a lot of young catchers hit well through about the low A level, but they hit high A, double A, and they really fall off. So there's still some stuff to be seen here. But everything Ivan Herrera has shown us to this point is certainly promising.
Yeah, so I guess 2020 would be a fairly big year for him. What are you kind of looking forward to him doing to kind of continue cementing himself as one of the top prospects in this system, and maybe if he continues improving in the game?
I mean, the main thing is show he could go out and hit a high class A competition, especially in a place like Palm Beach where – you know, that's one of the most pitcher-friendly parks in the country. If he could go out there as essentially at age 20, a 20-year-old, and hit there, while also just continuing to make the natural strides as a defender that come with age and time. You know, blocking, receiving, he shows you the ability. It's a little inconsistent right now. Mm-hmm. Has the arm strength. Sometimes his throws played out the slow release. I mean, there's always little things to grow and work on. Still throughout 31% of base stealers last year. So as long as he just makes the natural strides defensively that he should and kind of continues to hit and shows that his hitting ability translates to Palm Beach, mm-hmm. we're going to be looking at a potential top 100 prospect if he can do those things.
Yeah, awesome. All right, then moving into number six, we got Zach Thompson. He's a left-handed pitcher drafted out of Kentucky. This past year in the draft, he was a guy who was he really had pedigree going back to his high school days. He was selected by the Rays out of high school in the 11th round, but bet on himself, went to college, and that paid off handsomely. He's a guy who I would say my thoughts on him pre-draft, some of the best stuff in a very down pitching class. I think you could argue that he had the best overall package of stuff, control, size, projection, but the injury concerns were kind of what let him slide to the middle of the first round. How has his profile changed since he's kind of been in the Cardinals system? What have you heard about him, Kyle?
Well, he hasn't been there very long. He only pitched 13 games last year, 15 the third innings. So the Cardinals, you know, it's still mostly what they saw out of the draft and what they liked. But there were some interesting developments. You know, one of the biggest things was he got up to 97 miles an hour in relief, high class A, Palm Beach. You know, his slider was considered better than his curveball in college. When he got to pro ball, the curveball was actually better. So, you know, now you're seeing, okay, you know, now there's two breaking balls he can work with. He's showing you that he can get up to the upper 90s, you know, sat comfortably 91, 94 when he started. So I think it's more just showing, okay, the guy we saw in college is who we're getting in pro ball and potentially even a little bit better. Mm-hmm. You know, the confident, aggressive demeanor that you want to see from, you know, an experienced college guy. I mean, he pitched for Team USA, collegiate national team. He broke James Paxton's school record for strikeouts by a left-hander at Kentucky. Golden Spikes Award semifinalist. I mean, the pedigree is all there. You know, the poise, the confidence that you expect to see was there. So mm-hmm. I think it was more just him showing, like, okay, yeah, everything that they thought they were going to get, they got. You mentioned his health is still something that has to come. His control's average, command and consistency kind of waver a little bit. That's something that is going to be key to watch in his first full year, along with his health. So, you know, you can never replicate, okay, go out and throw 100, 120, 130 professional innings. But he kind of solidified everything the Cardinals thought was there when they drafted him is in fact there. And they do think he has a chance to move pretty quickly, whether that means he gets up to AAA his first full year or maybe for the majors in a relief role, we'll see. But he's got stuff and there's a lot to like.
Yeah, I really like this pick for the Cardinals. I felt like he's a guy who, if he does stay healthy, I mean, this could end up being a really good pick and a steal where he was selected. I mean, he was a guy who was potentially could have snuck into the top 10 just based on talent alone. So we'll see what happens. Kind of after this top six, how does the 7 to 10 stack up? Is it a fairly big drop off? Are we still talking about players in the same kind of tier as the middle of the system? How do we evaluate the Cardinals back of the top 10, starting with Andrew Knitzer?
Yeah. So I mentioned, you know, numbers 1 and 2, Nolan Gorman and Dylan Carlson and Nolan Gorman, clear top two. Those are top 100 prospects. 3 to 6 is a clear second tier. None of those guys are top 100 prospects, but you know, they're all, you know, in a place where they can either impact the major league team next year or have potential to be top 100 guys when you talk about Herrera or Thompson. 7 to 10 is more of a clear third tier. Guys who, you know, are either going to be good big leaguers in kind of a complementary role or guys who do enough to kind of keep you interested. You know, Andrew Kinzer, Lane Thomas, Randy Arozarena, 3 of the 4 that are 7 through 10. Mm-hmm. All, you know, all got to the major leagues, all have roles with the team long term. It's just probably more in a reserve role. Kinzer is kind of the part-time, you know, catcher. Thomas as a fourth outfielder. Randy Arozarena as a fourth or fifth outfielder. Good players who can help you and you do need, but not standouts. And then, you know, you have El Harris Montero, who was a top 100 prospect last year, had a bunch of hamstring and wrist injuries this year. Just had a really, really rough year. There is still hope for him. His risk has just become a little more extreme. So you're not quite sure what you're getting. So Again, I would say 1 through 6, you're getting guys you feel like have a chance to play semi-significant roles in the major leagues. 7 to 10, it's more complementary roles in the major leagues or high-risk guys.
Yeah. So I guess Montero probably has the highest upside of this back end of the top 10. Is that safe to say?
Yeah, but again, you're talking to the guy who tries not to deal so much in upside. I think the realistic aspect of whether a guy will get there is a huge part of this. In that regard, you know, Kinsler and Thomas are ranked highest for a reason. Kinsler can hit. You know, the defense draws very mixed reviews. The hope is it becomes average. Like, that's best case scenario. It's presently a tick below. You know, again, he's fine back there. He's not a butcher, but for the Cardinals and the standards they have, especially after a decade plus of Yadier Molina, it's not quite the defensive level they want to see. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Lane Thomas, there's injuries that have just kind of hampered him his entire career. The 1 year he stayed healthy, he showed he actually has a chance to be more than maybe a fourth outfielder, but most think that's what he's going to be long-term. He did make some really good contact, a lot of hard hit balls when he made his major league debut last year. So, you know, two players who are good, it's always possible they exceed expectations, but for the most part, they're seen as kind of, hey, big league ready, part-timers who will help. They'll have some good moments. Not pure bench guys, you know, get a couple starts a week, come off the bench other days. I think those are the two that, you know, Cardinals fans will be most familiar with and get to know. And, you know, if Montero clicks and shoots back up, awesome. But at this point, you know, Kinsler and Thomas are ahead of him for a reason.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. All right. Now that we've kind of talked about the top 10, are there any guys who maybe just missed the list, or there's also another interesting Korean signee the Cardinals actually signed in December out of Korea who we might want to touch on here? Any guys that come to mind, I guess, for you? I'll let you just take it.
Yeah, so at the time we put the list together, the only guy who was really in consideration for the top 10 beyond this group was Johan Oviedo, a right-hander from Cuba, who he's huge. He's listed 6'6", 210. He's probably bigger than that. Always showed you some real stuff, flashes of feel and command. Typically always a slow starter who gets better in the second half. Mm-hmm. Did it again last year, got up to double-A. All the stuff ticked up. Is up to 98. You saw the secondaries take steps forward. Just kind of repeating the delivery and getting his command completely, you know, kind of harnessing it completely is the next big step for him. But he's trending in the right direction. There are a couple people in the Cardinal system who think this guy has a chance to really explode next year. I'll probably go back to double-A, see time in triple-A at Memphis, which we know the challenges facing pitchers at triple-A right now. But there's a lot to like there. If you wanted to make a pure upside play, you could argue him probably as high as number 7 or 8. But, you know, there's also a lot more risk there just given, you know, the size, the command, the inconsistency he's shown at various points in the season. But if it clicks, it could click pretty big.
Yep. Then I also wanted to ask you about Kwang Hyun Kim, who is the Korean signee. I think December 17th is when that was announced. Obviously that's past our deadline for the handbook. Where do you think he would fit in this Cardinal system after kind of seeing the signing and knowing about him as a pitcher?
So Kim, you know, he's 31 years old, very, very decorated lefty, won a gold medal with South Korea back in 2008, has been a big part of their World Baseball Classic teams. He's really been one of the best pitchers in South Korea the last few years. Just pitched for their team at Premier 12 that clinched the Olympic berth and really showed some good stuff there. Most evaluators see him as, you know, he's got 4 or 5 pitches. They're all average. Nothing is plus, but he's a lefty who can mix and match, beat you a couple different ways. You will hear some back-end starter projections. A lot of others think he might be more of kind of a swingman spot starter setup guy who can, you know, bridge a couple of innings for you. He would definitely have been in the Cardinals' top 10 had he signed before a transaction deadline. Mm-hmm. You know, it's tough because it depends on who you talk to, what role he's going to play. If you are really, really confident that he's a polished, major league ready back-end starter who's ready to plug in right now, you could argue him as high as number 3. Mm-hmm. If you think he's more that spot starter, you know, reliever who's valuable, but, you know, it's not overwhelming, I think you probably shove him in at like number 8 or 9. So I think I probably just the feedback we've gotten might have been more that number 8 or 9 range, more of a complimentary guy as opposed to a 32 start through a rotation type of guy.
Yeah.
Another way, this was a really good signing at a very low cost, and he's an experienced lefty with enough stuff and experience to help the Cardinals in 2020 and beyond. You know, not just win another Central title, but you know, potentially make it back to the NLCS and advance to the World Series. A lot of times, you know, when we do prospect rankings, we kind of poo-poo these complimentary guys, say, oh, you know, he's not a regular. Well, go watch Major League Baseball. And a lot of times those complimentary guys are what makes the difference. Having that good seventh, eighth inning bridge guy, having that, you know, that outfield depth, having that backup catcher that isn't an offensive sinkhole. A lot of times those are the little things that make a difference. And the Cardinals have a nice mix of both potential stars at the top and potential complementary difference makers at the bottom of their top 10.
Nice. Well, Kyle, thank you for running it down for us. If there's any other comments or players you want to bring up in the system that are just interesting to you, feel free. But otherwise, appreciate you breaking everything down for us.
Yeah, I mean, that's really kind of it, which is kind of goes back to what I talked about. It's a pretty good top of the system. It does fall off pretty hard at the back, but this is the Cardinals. You know they're going to get the most out of somebody, and the guys they have, you feel pretty good about them reaching their ceilings. You know, I talk a lot about the Dodgers having the best player development apparatus in baseball. To me, the Cardinals are number two. I mean, this is a great organization that consistently churned out talent. They do great work with college draftees in particular. We see it every year. A college draftee that isn't considered to be all that great becomes an everyday regular. Those Paul DeJong and Tommy Edman are the most recent examples of that. You bet on the Cardinals, you know, doing the most to get the best out of all their players. And that's why they're in a good position to win, you know, not just last year, but into 2020 and into 2021 and beyond as well.
Well, awesome. Thank you, Kyle. And thank you guys for listening to the latest episode of the Baseball America podcast. Kyle will continue plugging these out. I'm sure I might pop in here and there as well as we continue to roll this out. But if you're looking for something to read, we've got a lot of stuff on the website. If you're not subscribed to the magazine, you might want to check that out as well. Also, not too late to get your prospect handbooks. Well, those are going to print, I think, around February at some point. So still plenty of time if you haven't already ordered those. We've got college preview content on the way, and we also have some new updated draft rankings on the way as well if you want to get a head start on that. So it's always a great time to be a Baseball America subscriber, reader, listener, and we really appreciate you guys. For Kyle, I'm Carlos Collazo. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.